Welcome to the 13 Skulls. A journey into a world that is just beyond our comprehension. The world of the paranormal.
Welcome to the 13 Skulls. In this week's episode, we take a look at why the Catholic Church is calling for more exorcism training against evil, moving and light-emitting Buddha statues in Malaysia, some brothers dug up corpses and made curry out of them, executed witches get a pardon in Germany, mysterious cosmic blasts are puzzling astronomers, a perilous flyby of a huge asteroid in November, and how you might be able to escape Earth before 2012. That and a lot more in this 57th episode of the 13 Skulls. Welcome back, everybody. I really appreciate you coming out and taking a listen to the show. This is a free and premium episode all in one, like it is every other weekend. So I wanted to go ahead and get this out of the way. I've already talked to the premium people about it. It's been something that I've had in the works for about 2 weeks now, and I wanted to go ahead and let you free people know what's going on with it. Now, I've decided to go ahead and cancel the premium content. It's just not really working out the way that I thought it would. For the amount of time that I've put into it, it's really not quite paying for itself, I guess. There just really wasn't seeming to be a whole lot of demand for it. So in order to make it fair for everyone, I've decided to go ahead and stop doing them. I've got two more left after this one to do, and then they'll be done, and I'll be able to focus on the free shows a little bit more. I've got a lot of good things in line for the show. We're going to start doing interviews, some roundtable discussions with everyone who listens to the show. Like I said, we're going to be doing interviews. There's some people that we have lined up, and I say we because Rogan is going to be doing them with me. He's going to be doing some interviews on his own, I think. We're also going to be just changing things up a little bit. As far as the way the show is run, it's going to be about the same, but it's going to be a little bit better, I believe. It's going to be more of a variety of stuff that's going to be put into the show rather than just what's going on in the news right now. The shows, as far as I know, will start to be a little bit longer as well. But I think there's a lot of really good things that are going to be put into the show come up in about 3 weeks. It's going to be starting to change a little bit. There's going to be some new things added into it. But I think it's for the best. I really do. But as of right now, in 2 weeks from now, whenever you guys are hearing this, there will be the last premium show. So don't bother in going and signing up because it's not going to be there. I'm not going to be able to process your payment. I don't want to take your money if, you know, I'm going to be ending it. So I'm not going to be doing that. I wanted to do it in a way that is not reminiscent of the way other things have gone for other shows. Plus, I also wanted to make sure that I did it in a way that was fair to everyone. So anyway, as fair as I could possibly make it, as fair as I can come up with. But I think it's really going to be a good decision to do. I had to try it just to see how things were going to go. Anyway, I just wanted to let you guys know about that, about the premium shows being canceled. Again, simply just because they weren't paying for themselves. And I just wanted to, you know, I wanted to give it a shot and see what happened, but it just didn't work out the way that I wanted to. So we're going to focus more on the free show. So anyway, let's go ahead and move on to what I wanted to talk about in this episode. We've just got a whole lot of really good stuff coming up. I really do believe that you guys are going to be enjoying it a lot. I wanted to take a look at an article courtesy of CatholicNews.com. The church leaders are calling for more training against evil, a call to arms of sort. To take up weapons of the rosary and prayer rang out at a recent international conference on exorcism in Rome. The church needs more training of both priests and laypeople in fighting the influence of the devil and bringing spiritual healing to those in need. This is warfare. We've gotten way behind. We've lost the concept of spiritual warfare, said Monsignor Marvin Mottet, the official exorcist of the Diocese of Davenport in Iowa. The 80-year-old retired priest said that about once a month he sees a serious case of possession and tons, quote-unquote, of cases of demonic influence in which people are being bothered or attacked by evil spirits. These kinds of cases, he said, are a daily thing. Monsignor Mottet was one of 60 people attending a course on exorcism and Satanism at the Legionnaires at Christ Regina Apostolorum University in Rome between March 28th and April 2nd. The course, which does not train people to become exorcists, attracted many people who were already familiar and experienced with exorcism. 10 of them were from the United States. The majority of the participants were priests, but some were lay doctors, psychologists, and parishioners active in prayer ministry. The course looks at the theological and spiritual elements of exorcism, as well as the psychological, sociological, and criminal aspects of demonic cults, sects, and Satanism. During the breaks in question and answer periods, priests eagerly shared theories and, quote-unquote, war stories of strange or difficult cases of possession. Monsignor Mottet and other exorcists said just as there are different levels of the devil's influence on a person, so there are different methods to counter it. With exorcism being reserved to priests who have their bishop's permission and are certain the person is experiencing real demonic possession, the more common problems of temptation and general demonic influence or activity, they said, can be resolved by receiving the sacraments, especially the sacrament of reconciliation, or prayers for healing and deliverance, which trained lay Catholics can recite. Some participants and speakers said they're convinced demonic influence has increased drastically, in part because of the growth of La Santa Muerta in Mexico and other cults, voodoo, witchcraft, and satanic practices, as well as increasing secularism and lack of connection with God and the sacraments. The devil needs us, Father Nanny said. The devil is like a sophisticated car or tool without fuel. And through the sin of man, he gathers strength and uses us like a battery to recharge. The devil has more power today precisely because there is more sin. But when there is more holiness and when people begin to forgive others, choose the good, and be merciful, that's less strength for the devil, and all humanity benefits, according to Father Nanny. People think that if they remove God from their lives, they will be freer, said conventional Franciscan Father John Farrell, a prison chaplain of the Diocese of Monterey in California. Pope Benedict has often spoke about the existence of the devil, and at the start of Lent, urged Christians to make a commitment to take Jesus' side against sin and engage in spiritual battle against the spirit of evil. It's really fascinating to me. I mean, maybe the way the world is now is different. Maybe there is more sin. But for me, I don't know if there is more sin. For the way I look at it, I don't think there is more sin. I think there's always been the same amount of sin. It just might be increasing now because there's more people on the planet than there ever has been. And with an increase in people, you'll have an increase in sin. But is there really more of it? Is there really, other than just a quantity, are there more types of sin? Or is it just simply because there are more people? Well, I just thought it was interesting that the Catholics are calling for more training against the devil. The next article that I wanted to take a look at is courtesy of KRQE.com. Botanists have found what they're saying is a mysterious alien cactus. Now, I wanted to go ahead and play the audio for the video that's here. It's not too long. It's just rather interesting.
Little green men are no strangers to Roswell, but now one New Mexico botanist says a little green plant has an out-of-this-world connection, too. David Salmon says that he was on a seed hunting trip near Roswell when he noticed a faint glow coming from what appeared to be a meteor crater. He says it turned out that the light was coming from a small patch of carnivorous cacti. That's right. Salmon says that he found a cactus that eats bugs, glows, and probably came to Earth on a meteor. He says he scooped up some samples to see if someone could identify them, but so far, no luck.
You know, there is considerable speculation around here today about whether that's an April Fool's joke.
But you know, he did it quite a while back. So I don't know, maybe he just waited for today.
The cactus that ate the world.
Yeah, dangerous.
Now, is that just a leftover April Fool's joke? I don't know. This article did come out on Saturday, April 2nd, so it very well could be. But I'm wondering if this is real. Now, if you go and take a look at the cactus itself, it's a rather odd-looking thing. It looks like this wrinkled-up, grayish-bluish, gunmetal-blue creature, weird little puffy thing, with this, like, cottony-looking, coarse, type of fabric-y-looking stuff in the middle of it. It doesn't actually show it eating anything. You know, maybe it's like a Venus flytrap where it actually does eat an actual living creature. But I just found this to be really weird because I've never seen anything like this before. Is it something new? I don't know. Is it something alien? Very well might be, but I'm not really too sure about it. I want you guys to go and take a look at this and let me know what you think about the alien cactus in New Mexico. Now, the next article that I wanted to take a look at is a rather creepy photo. It's from metro.co.uk. According to the people who own this house, they're saying that it's haunted and they have a picture to prove it. A youngster's ghostly playmate has been caught on camera in a photograph taken on a mobile phone. Of course, you know, it's got to be on a mobile phone where it's grainy and not very good. Now, before I get into this, if it's an iPhone, then they do have an app on there where you can incorporate a ghost into a picture that you take. It's some kind of an app. I've never actually used it, but that's what I've heard. The picture, which shows the ghost, is standing next to a 5-year-old little boy named Cyrus Walsh. And he's standing next to what looks to be a childlike ghost. The family now claims that their house is haunted, but insists no one is worried as their spooky visitors are not threatening. According to Cyrus's grandmother, Julie Smith, she says, "My daughter was just taking pictures of the children larking about with her new phone when she saw that the first photo of her two boys had a halo over both of them. She thought this isn't right and deleted it. And when she looked at the next picture, that she noticed Cyrus's little playmate. What was quite strange is that she put it on Facebook and within an hour it must have had about 20 comments, then it disappeared off the site." Ms. Smith denies that the photo is fake, insisting that no one in her family has the technical know-how to mock up a forgery. Which, these days, you don't have to have a lot of technological know-how to mock up a forgery. You really don't. To do something that's fake like that these days, all you have to do is download an app, or really, you really don't have to have a whole lot of knowledge of it. Just the right program to use. You know, you don't have to be a whiz at graphic design or anything to be able to do this. Anyway, it's an odd picture. What you're going to see in the picture, it's a rather orange-looking photo, like the color orange. It looks like this orange curtain behind the boy. What's odd about the picture is that the boy is just standing there staring at his mom or the camera with his arms straight down to his side with this odd-looking smile on his face. Maybe she said, hey, just stand there. I want to take a picture of you. And he just stood there. I'm not really sure. Now, off to the left side of the picture, which would actually be to the boy's right side, you'll see this gray little image of a boy, of a little boy, maybe I would say 3 years old. Now, the boy himself is about 5, so this little boy may be about 2 or 3. He's just a little itty-bitty little ghost of a boy. Is it fake? I don't know. You can definitely make out the facial features, the hair. You can make out which way the hair is parted. The part on the boy's head would go from the boy's left to the boy's right. It's just a slanted haircut with a face, little chubby cheeks, and what appears to be a body. You can barely make out some detail of what would be clothing. Is it real? I don't know. Is it fake? I'm starting to think maybe it is, but it might not be. If it's not, it's a creepy photo, and someone needs to go investigate this house. But if it's with a phone, and it might be an iPhone, there's a lot of possibility that might be faked, especially since the woman put it up and then took it down off of Facebook so quickly. If you really wanted to get some answers of it, you would have put the photo up there and left it there for people to take a look at, unless people were berating you for putting it up there. Maybe you should have photoshopped out your son's face or something before you put it up there, but either way, I just thought it was really interesting that these people are claiming that their house is haunted. I want you guys to go and take a look at this picture and give me some feedback. I'd love to know what you guys think about this. Now, the next article slash videos that I wanted to take a look at are courtesy of beforeitsnews.com. Thank you, Rojan, for sending these in. They're very interesting. They've slightly made their rounds around the internet, so some of you might have seen them. They're Buddha statues in Malaysia that have been seen moving and emitting light. Several Buddha statues in the Pujian Service Center in Kuala Lumpur in Malaysia have recently been seen moving their lips, blinking, and moving their chest and hands and emitting light. The strange phenomenon occurred for almost an hour at 5 to 6 p.m. local time on February 27th after a service at the Buddha Center. Mourners were lining up to meet Tong Zhu, the abbot of the center, when they saw that the Buddha statues in the room had started moving. The witnesses told the newspaper that they first saw one of the Buddha statues' lips moving, and its chest also moved as if it was breathing. Then other statues started moving their lips too, and some kept blinking and even moving their fingers up and down. Many of the witnesses recorded the strange phenomenon with their cell phone and cameras and uploaded the videos to YouTube and Facebook. One particular video shows light emanating from the swastika symbol on a Buddha statue's chest several times. Now, just to let people know, the swastika was adopted by the Nazis. They didn't create it. They didn't come up with it. They didn't make it. It was something that they adopted from a different culture into what they incorporated it into what they were doing. They liked the symbol. So it's not a racist thing at all, just to let you guys know. Anyway, another video shows a blue light appearing behind one of the statues. Now, I want you guys to go and take a look at these statues. There's a little bit more there to it, but that's basically, you get the gist of what the videos were. There are some links there to the videos that you guys can go and take a look at that are on YouTube. Some of them are only maybe 40 seconds long or so. Now, personally for me, the pictures and video are a little bit grainy. You can see the pixelation in there, which does make it appear that the lips are moving and that it's talking. It does look as if they're moving, but I'm thinking that it might be just something messing with your mind as far as the pixelation goes. But I want you guys to go and take a look at them. They're really interesting. Some of the people who were present in the center said they couldn't see the statues moving, but in the video that they took, they could see the statues moving their lips, which makes me think that it was possibly just the pixelation that you were seeing that made it look like they were actually talking or moving their lips. Some people did say that they saw the statues moving in person, but their videos didn't show anything abnormal at all. Who are you supposed to believe there? A pixelated video or someone who said they saw it? Because for me, you can't really truly trust a video, nor can you really truly trust a person. Now, if you show me the video on your phone and it looks like it's actually doing what it's doing, then I might be a little more pressed to believe what you're saying. But you do have to take a person for what their word is worth, and you do have to take a video for what it is. So is it just pixelation? Is it not just pixelation? I don't really know. I want you guys to go and take a look at it. Now, I'm just noticing here, there was quite an interesting quote. A guy named Guang Ming told the daily newspaper that reported on this, "The voices from the statues are particularly loud and harmonious and sound like they are from another dimension." I looked at all these videos. I didn't hear anything that sounded odd. What I heard were people talking. I didn't hear any music. I didn't hear any harmonious voices. I didn't hear anything as if they were coming from a different dimension, but that's just me. Maybe I just didn't hear it. Maybe there was something about my headphones that didn't allow me to hear it. Maybe I was in too loud of an environment. Maybe I just am not exposed to it. I don't know. I want you guys to go and take a look at the videos and let me know what you think. Now, the next thing that I wanted to take a look at is something that I just found to be really, really odd. It's really interesting, and I hope they find the person. It's courtesy of WRAL.com. Italian researchers said this past Tuesday that they will dig up the bones in a Florence convent to try to identify the remains of a Renaissance woman long believed to be the model for the Mona Lisa. If successful, the research might help ascertain the identity of the woman depicted in Leonardo da Vinci's masterpiece, a mystery that has puzzled scholars and art lovers for centuries and generated countless theories. The project, launched Tuesday, aims to locate the remains of Lisa Gherardini, the wife of a rich silk merchant named Francesco del Giocondo. The tradition has long linked Gherardini to the painting, which is known in Italian as La Gioconda. Giorgio Vasari, a 16th century artist and biographer of Leonardo, wrote that Da Vinci painted a portrait of del Giocondo's wife. Gherardini was born in 1479, and a few years ago, an amateur Italian historian said he found a death certificate showing she died on July 15th of 1542, with her final resting place being the convent of St. Ursula in central Florence. That is where the digging will begin next month. Silvano Vincetti also cited documents showing that the Giocondo family made generous donations to the convent, and said Giocondos will arrange for the wife's remains to be kept in the convent. The group, led by Vincetti, has already reconstructed the faces of some Italian artists on the basis of their skulls, and last year it said it identified the bones of Caravaggio and discovered a possible cause of death 400 years after the artist died in mysterious circumstances. The researchers will use ground penetration radar to search for hidden tombs inside the convent. Then they will search for the bones to identify ones that are compatible with Gherardini's, bones that belong to a woman who died in her 60s in the period in question. The group will also look for specific characteristics such as traces of possible diseases or bone structure that match what is known of Gherardini's life. If such bones are identified, the researchers will conduct carbon dating and extract DNA, which will be compared to that extracted from the bones of Gherardini's children, some of whom are buried in a basilica also in Florence. If the skull fragments are found, depending on how well preserved they are, the group might attempt a facial reconstruction. This step will be crucial to ascertain whether Gherardini was indeed a model for the Mona Lisa, and thus the owner of the famous smile. Now, this will be really interesting. I hope they do. I hope they find the bones, because I would love to see them do a facial reconstruction on this, just to see how close it would be to what the Mona Lisa looks like. Now, did Da Vinci change over some details on the Mona Lisa? Did he make Mona Lisa look different than Gherardini did? Did he change it up so it wouldn't look exactly like her? Or did he make it look identical to her? Now, it is the Mona Lisa, and this was Lisa Gherardini. So hopefully, this is the person that they're looking for. Well, guys and gals, we're going to take a quick break here. When we get back, we're going to look at ink that's helping to detect explosives. We're also going to look at a strange case of earthworms raining down onto a school and spiders that are covering trees and webs in Pakistan. So you guys stay put. We'll be back in just a minute.
He taught us, we stand, defiant, we fall. He taught us, we stand, defiant, we fall.
He taught us, we stand, defiant, we fall.
He taught us, we stand, defiant, we fall.
He taught us, we stand, defiant, we fall.
He taught us, we stand, defiant, we fall.
He taught us, we stand, defiant, we fall.
He taught us, we stand, defiant, we fall.
He taught us, we stand, defiant, we fall.
Welcome back, everybody. The next article that I wanted to take a look at is courtesy of news.discovery.com. Explosives detecting ink could help ground terrorists. A new spray-on material that detects and neutralizes explosives commonly used by terrorists could lift government restrictions on liquids carried aboard airliners. The material is an ink-like substance made of tiny metallic oxide nanoparticles that change colors from dark blue to pale yellow or clear in the presence of a peroxide-based explosive. These explosives were used by terrorists in the 2005 London subway bombing and by the thwarted shoe bomber who attempted to detonate this substance aboard an airplane in 2001. This stuff is going to be used anywhere terrorist explosives are used, including battlefields, airports, and subways, said study leader Dr. Alan Ablett. Ablett, a professor at Oklahoma State University, presented his findings at a meeting of the American Chemical Society. Ablett said, "The color change feature allows the material to act as a sensor for quickly detecting vapors produced by explosives that could be hidden in clothing, food, or beverages. The ink contains nanoparticles of a molybdenum compound, a metal often used in missile and aircraft parts. The test strips containing the ink could be dipped into non-beverage liquids prior to boarding. For beverages, a unique capillary tube filled with the ink could be inserted into these liquids that would not contaminate the drink. A sample would be drawn and the chemical reaction would take place inside the tube." Ablett and his colleagues founded ExploSafe, a company that develops and markets the ink-like material. They hope the explosives-detecting substance will be used in airports in as little as a year. I know that there are going to be people out there that are going to say that them inserting this into your drink is inserting some kind of chemical in there to control the minds of the populace or something like that. You know how conspiracy theorists are? I think like one half the time just because I think it's fun to think about what could possibly be what people might be doing in secret behind your back that you don't know of. But what are they going to be doing? I mean, people aren't going to really, I mean, some people will, the general public will agree to let them dip this stuff into their food, into their drinks, just because they want to be able to take their own stuff aboard an aircraft. I just thought it was interesting. You know, I don't know. Would you mind it? What would you think? What are your feelings on it? I want to know. Let me know. Give me some feedback. Email me at the13skulls@gmail.com. And let me know what you think about the explosives detecting ink. Now, the next article that I wanted to take a look at is courtesy of dailymail.co.uk. Now, this is just really interesting. There's a video to go along with it. Our U.S. government microwave mind control test causing TV presenters' brains to melt down. Now, you guys have probably heard about the one blonde female reporter that just completely spoke gibberish on the air, even though she was trying to make it sound like she was saying something. There now is a conspiracy saying that the U.S. military could be to blame. In four high-profile cases, the latest involving fast-talking Judge Judy, the presenters have started off speaking properly but then have descended into undecipherable nonsense, looking confused and unstable. The frequency of the quote-unquote attacks and the fact that recorded examples of the mental meltdowns have been popular on websites has led to conspiracy theorists pointing the finger at shadowy government experiments. A popular theory being circulated online blames the U.S. military's supposed research into using microwaves as a mind control weapon. Although, the military has never admitted conducting such research, by proponents saying the effects produced by microwave signals stimulating the brain with fake images and voices exactly mimic those displayed in the recent on-air breakdowns. As to why the Pentagon might be targeting U.S. television presenters, the microwave theorists are less clear. The phenomenon has provided internet video sites with some of the oddest footage for months. No footage has been released of the Judge Judy incident, but footage of the other three has rapidly gone viral on the internet. Now, the woman that I was talking about earlier, I believe her name was Serene Branson. She's the one that spoke just gibberish. It's really, really odd. Mark McAllister of Global Toronto News did the exact same thing. And I wanted to play that video for you right now just so you get an idea of what they're talking about as far as them speaking gibberish.
Now, Defense Minister McCain McLeod did confirm today that more than 54 18 fighter jets are spending about as much as 20 and ready to assist the 600 deployed over the amount needed. Now, it did depend that how the NOLAN remerges RN while the university or the UN mission as whole received support from all batteries in the hues of the gardens of today. Excuse me. I'll hand it back to you.
Thank you, Mark McAllister from Japan Tonight. Newly released video.
I just found it to be really interesting that he was talking about a military topic when he started speaking gibberish, but is it direct, so pinpointed at one person that it's not going to affect the other reporter who's standing 20 feet away? I don't know. It's just odd to me that these people are speaking gibberish. Are they just having some kind of a meltdown mentally on their own? Are they too stressed out? Are they on drugs? I think there's so many other explanations that you could have for this. Are they having some kind of a meltdown, a migraine, like they said that Serene Branson did, you know, when she was reporting on the Grammys? It's just really odd to me. I want to see the Judge Judy incident. I don't know why they would be pinpointing her if that's what's happening. Is the government doing this? Is the military doing this? United States military, are they the ones using microwaves? Why would you do that? I can, in ways, thinking like a conspiracy theorist, see why it is that you would want to mess with the mind of someone who's reporting about the military. But why just that one person? Wouldn't you want to do that with all reporters across the United States, across the world, that are reporting on what you're doing? Would you want to focus on all of them? Unless this guy had more information and was reporting on something about Libya that people didn't know? That the government didn't want him to get out there? I don't know. I found it to be really odd. People are saying that their head was pounding, they were uncomfortable, they knew something wasn't right, they were terrified, confused, they didn't know what to think, they were actually fearful themselves while it was happening. But what is it that's happening? I don't really know. It's really, really strange, and I have no idea what to think about it. The next article that I wanted to take a look at is just something that I found to be really, for me, I found it to be rather ironic, but really interesting at the same time. It's courtesy of ContactMusic.com. Sigourney Weaver believes in extraterrestrials. For those of you who don't know who Sigourney Weaver is, if you've ever seen the movie Aliens, then she was the main character in that, the main female character. She played in the Alien movies as Ellen Ripley, and she was the heroine who battles the deadly acid-blooded xenomorphs and is convinced that extraterrestrials exist, and she believes the U.S. government actively suppresses information about UFOs. She told German magazine TV Spiegelfilm, "We are not alone in the universe. I think there's a department in the U.S. government which is exclusively dedicated to quashing reports about aliens. And that's so unfair. It would be nice if we weren't just able to read about it in tabloids." The 61-year-old actress, who can currently be seen in sci-fi spoof Paul with Simon Pegg and Nick Forrest, is not the only star who believes in aliens. Keanu Reeves, who previously claimed who has no doubt that there is other life forms in the universe, he said, "I think there are extraterrestrial life forms in the cosmos. I think it's more likely than not. The cosmos is a pretty big place." Robbie Williams has also claimed to have several close encounters of the third kind in the past few years, including being visited by spaceships on three occasions. The singer has said, "Once I was lying on my sun lounger outside at night, and above me was a square thing that passed over my head slightly and shot off." There's no more to this article here. I just found it to be really interesting when celebrities and people who have been around in the public eye for a long period of time eventually come out and say that they believe that there are extraterrestrial life forms in the universe and that we aren't alone. But at the same time, they're thinking just like us. They're normal people just like us. They just happen to have a job that puts them in the public spotlight. Anyway, I just found it to be really interesting that Sigourney Weaver, who just so happened to fight aliens and beat aliens in a movie called Alien, believes in aliens. Now, the next article that I wanted to take a look at, I wanted to put it in the show simply because I've seen something weird like this. I haven't seen it actually rain worms before, but according to an article courtesy of web.orange.co.uk, pupils at a Scottish school had run for cover when it started raining worms during their physical education class. Teacher David Crichton was leading a group of students playing football on an AstroTurf field in Galashiels Academy when dozens of worms began plummeting from the sky. The boys had to abandon their lesson as the earthworms fell during the bizarre incident, according to STV. Mr. Crichton, who's 26, said, "We started hearing these wee thudding noises on the ground. There were about 20 worms already on the ground by this point. Then they just kept coming down. The kids were laughing, but some were covering their heads and were running away for cover to get out of the way." Mr. Crichton and his colleagues eventually found around 120 worms in total on the artificial football field and nearby tennis courts. He said, "Everyone was having a laugh at me about it until they went out and saw for themselves. They were joking about it and said, 'If you don't believe me, go out and have a look.' Everyone thought I was mad. They came back in and looked shocked. The boys have certainly been talking about it all the time since then. I spoke with the science department here, but none of them had any explanation for it. One of them thought maybe it was a freak weather thing, but it was such a clear, calm day." Now, there's no more there to this article here. It does give a whole new meaning to bookworm. No, sorry, that was a bad joke on my part. I just think it was really interesting. I've seen it rain tadpoles and frogs, and I don't know what it is that causes this stuff, especially on clear, calm days. For me, whenever I saw it happen, it looked like it was going to rain. It wasn't a clear, calm day. I don't remember it being a really windy day or anything along those lines, but I do remember it being overcast. Obviously, no one is using a catapult to drop these things. I doubt for any reason they would be falling from a plane. Is it a freak weather phenomenon of some kind? I think so. How did they get there if there were no clouds in the sky? It's just an odd thing. I thought it was really interesting. If you guys have any opinions on it, please let me know. I would love to hear about it. Now, this next thing that I want to take a look at is just rather funny. If you ever see a mermaid, you might win $1 million if you take a picture of it. This is courtesy of Helium.com. And they're saying that if you want to pocket a quick $1 million, just take a picture of a real live mermaid, and it's yours. A cool $1 million prize is being offered by Kiryat Yam government officials. Kiryat Yam is a coastal region in Israel near Haifa. Many witnesses claim to have seen the mermaid, who is said to appear at sunset and splash about in the ocean doing tricks for amazed onlookers. Nadi Zilberman, a local council spokesperson, told a Sky News reporter, "I believe if there really is a mermaid, then so many people will come to Kiryat Yam. A lot more money will be made than $1 million. So is this just a tourist thing? Is this just trying to get more people in there so they can have more revenue for their town?" But people who swear they've seen the elusive creature say it looks very much like a topless girl with the long body of a fish where human legs would normally be found. While reports of mermaids and sometimes mermen have been made throughout history, not one sighting has ever been verified. Most sightings have been optical illusions, mistaken fish or manatees, or just outright hoaxes. There's never really been, as far as what people say who are skeptical, there's never been a verified sighting of Bigfoot, of a chupacabra, of a Mothman, or anything along those lines, so it kind of falls right in that category. But for dozens of people who swear they've seen the mermaid off the beach at the seaside village of Kiryat Yam, knowing that past reports have been dubious at best has not dampened their enthusiasm. Many people are telling us they are sure they've seen a mermaid, and they are all independent of each other, said Zilberman. Mesmerizing half-human, half-fish creatures have filled the lore of the sea for many centuries. Reports of mermaids have come from places on Earth as diverse as Aruba to Java and British Columbia to Barbados. Sailors warned each other that the mermaids could mesmerize them, and told tales of hapless seamen jumping off the ships towards the mermaids and meeting their doom. The most famous mermaid hoax involved none other than the 19th century showman and sometimes prankster P.T. Barnum. During the 1990s and early 2000s, several reports of mermaids spotted around the world made it into the wire news services. The latest sightings are the ones at Kiryat Yam. For those interested in the $1 million prize, it's still available because no one has succeeded in snapping a picture of the playful creature. So, you guys, I'm not sure exactly how you go and pocket this. I guess you would send this into the website, you know, the Helium, which is international news. I guess you could send that into them. I don't know. But maybe you should go to Kiryat Yam and get a picture of a mermaid. $1 million would go a long ways these days. All right, well, the next thing I want to take a look at are just some really strange pictures, courtesy of HuffingtonPost.com. An unexpected side effect of the flooding in parts of Pakistan have been that millions of spiders climbed up into the trees to escape the rising floodwaters. Because of the scale of the flooding and the fact that the water has taken so long to recede, many trees have been cocooned with spider webs. As a result, though, for a positive, the mosquito populations seem to have decreased. A small blessing likely caused by the webs. Aid from the UK government in response to the floods is helping millions of survivors return home and rebuild their lives, only to come home to trees that are cocooned in spider webs. You guys need to go take a look at these, man. These spider webs, they're crazy. They really do look as if they're cocooned. These trees are actually cocooned in these webs. They're really quite oddly pretty, though. They're strange. I really enjoy looking at them because they're so odd. I love odd stuff like this. I want you guys to go and take a look at these pictures and let me know what you think. Some of these are even out in the floodwaters. Some of them are on dry land, but some of them are in the water themselves, so these spiders got nowhere to go other than where they're at right now. And if there's not a lot of bugs, I can see a lot of these spiders dying, but it seems to be a lot of these trees are covered with their webs. You guys got to go take a look at this and let me know what you think. Can you just imagine the number and quantity of spiders that you'd have to have to cover some of these trees the way that they're covered? Just imagine being there and seeing all these spiders. Creepy. All right, well, it is time to move on to another great episode of Anomalous.
And we found out that the makes people happy, it makes them intoxicated.
Welcome to Anomalous.
That's a lie.
Hello, everybody. This is Rogan. Welcome back to Anomalous.
for this week's episode, I've decided to hand the reins over to somebody else. I'm going to be handing them over to Miles this week over in the UK. From time to time, he's going to be doing shows for us as well, different urban legends, some really fascinating stuff he's found over there. So, Miles, you there?
Hello.
Hello. So you've recorded an episode about, who are we talking about today?
We're talking about Sawney Bean.
Sawney Bean. And what, in a nutshell, before we go into the recording, what? Give me a little bit about him. What's the story behind him? Things like that.
He was your basic run-of-the-mill serial killer stroke cannibal.
Okay. That pretty much explains it. And he was from where?
He lived in, the legend has it, he lived in a cave in Scotland.
All right, then. I guess I'll just hand the episode on over to you, and we'll roll it from there. Thanks a lot, Miles. I appreciate it.
I want to talk to you about Alexander Sawney Bean. Now, Sawney Bean was born in the late 14th century near Edinburgh in Scotland. He began life as a hedger and ditcher. I have no idea what that is. But he soon ran away from home with a woman who was evil as himself. Having no means to make a living, they naturally set up home in a sea cave and supported themselves by robbing and murdering travellers and locals and surviving on the victims' pickled and salted flesh. In time, their family grew to an incestuous gang of 46 sons, daughters, grandsons and granddaughters. Their reign of terror did not go unnoticed, as hundreds of people went missing over the years, and the Beans became so good at their butchery they cast the unwanted limbs into the sea, only for them to wash up on the shores of the local communities. Sawney's family had by now grown very large and started to attract larger groups, although never more than they thought they could overwhelm. They were confident they would not be discovered, as the cave they had chosen kept them well hidden from prying eyes. And when the tide came in, it passed right into the mouth of the cave, which went almost a mile underneath the cliffs. It was estimated that in their 25-year reign of terror, they killed more than 1,000 men, women and children. The family was finally discovered by chance when a man and his wife, returning from a local fair, were ambushed by the family. The husband put up a furious struggle with his sword and his pistol. His wife wasn't so fortunate. She fell off the back of the horse, only to be butchered by the female cannibals of the family, who ripped out her entrails and started to feast on her blood, zombie style. The horrified husband went straight to the magistrates in Glasgow, who in turn informed King James VI, who was so enthralled with the case that he took personal charge. And equipped with bloodhounds, the king and a posse of 400 men made their way to the scene of the slaughter. Now the bloodhounds get all the credit for the capture of the Bean family. The king's men didn't even notice the cave, but the dogs couldn't ignore the strong smell of flesh that surrounded it. The men entered the cave and found a horrible scene. Dried parts of human bodies were hanging from the roof, pickled limbs lay in barrels, and piles of money from the pockets of the dead lay all around. The Beans made no attempt to escape, so they were all caught alive and brought to Edinburgh in chains. The people were horrified when they heard about the crimes of Sawney Bean and his horrible family, and they decided to give him a punishment even more barbaric. The execution was a long, slow one. The men bled to death after their hands and legs were cut off, and the women were burned alive. One account of the execution reads, "They all died without the least sign of repentance, but continued cursing to the very last gasp of life." Now, the question you're all asking yourselves is, was it even true? Probably not, unfortunately. It seems as though it was a made-up story, probably late 18th century. There's no records mentioning Sawney Bean, let alone the king going out with a posse of bloodhounds and men. But wait a minute. A local blacksmith and psychic detective, of course, Tom Robinson, is convinced of the truth to the tale after witnessing ghosts in the cave of Sawney Bean. But Mr. Robinson believes that instead of being executed in Edinburgh, the Bean family were cornered and sealed alive in the cave to die a slow, agonising death. As for today, well, Sawney Bean's legend has become part of the tourist industry in Scotland. It's a reconstruction of his cave at the Edinburgh Dungeon, so if you ever pass him by, pop in and have a look. This is Miles reporting for Anomalous and the 13 Skulls, and I might talk to you again.
Like a bear.
Good to hear from you, dude. I could listen to you talk all day. I love your accent. You could read the phone book, and I would be enthralled with the way you read it. And thank you, Rogan. Thank you, Miles. I really appreciate you guys collaborating together. Hopefully, we can do that more in the future and get myself involved with it. Once we get the premium shows done, I think we'll be able to do more of that. I'm really looking forward to it. But Miles, man, that was a great story, dude. Sonny Bean, the zombie-like people that are just going out and cannibalizing people is just absolutely crazy. It's a great story, man. Miles, dude, like I said, thank you so much for coming in and doing that. I can't say thank you enough. That really means a lot to me. Same to you, Rogan, dude. You guys have been really, really great, in my opinion, for adding and giving me more content for the show. Giving everyone a little bit something different to listen to rather than just hearing me drone on and on and on every time the show comes out. But dude, guys, Rogan, Miles, thank you. Thank you greatly. I really do appreciate it. Now let's go ahead and move on to another article, which is courtesy of mirror.co.uk. German states are issuing a posthumous pardon for 169 executed witches. Scores of people executed for witchcraft have been given a posthumous pardon thanks to lobbying by school children. The victims, 169 men, women, and children, were boiled and burned alive, hacked to death, hanged, and stabbed in a religious frenzy lasting from 1573 to 1660. The move by the local justice authority in the northern Rhine-Westphalia state in Germany came after demands from pupils of Friedrichsbeetz School in the town of Rüthen. They submitted a petition saying that if the accused were cleared, they would regain their human dignity. The pupils said when someone was accused of being a witch, they had virtually no chance of surviving. It's all there is to this article here. There's nothing more there. I just thought it to be really interesting that they're giving pardons to 169 different people that were accused of witchcraft. I would think that they probably weren't witches for the most part. Even here in the States, whenever they had the Salem witch trials, most of the people there weren't witches and they were accused and, you know, were drowned and things like that. But man, just imagine being one of these 169 men, women, and children being boiled and burned alive, hacked to death, hanged, or stabbed. I mean, I can handle the stabbing and the hanging and the hacked to death, but man, just imagine being boiled alive. You ever been burned by boiling water? Just imagine that all over your entire body. Just absolutely crazy, but I'm glad to see them doing this. People who were accused of witchcraft back then were generally accused of it because of one person saying that they thought that they were a witch, and then they just went crazy with it, and people thought that everyone was a witch. If you went out at night, you were a witch. If you were seen talking to the wrong person, you were a witch. If you were seen doing the wrong thing at the wrong time, you were thought of as being a witch, so they would kill you. A lot of the times, they would kill you in a way that if you survived it, then you were a witch. But if you died, you weren't. I found it to be really neat and really cool that they are giving these witches pardons. Now, the next thing that I wanted to take a look at is courtesy of guardian.co.uk. Two men were arrested after a 24-year-old woman's grave is found empty a day after her funeral. Police in Pakistan have arrested two men for allegedly digging up a newly buried corpse and eating the flesh in a curry. The two brothers are said to have cut the legs from the body of a 24-year-old woman and cooked the flesh in a steel pot. Some of the gruesome dish had already been eaten when police raided the brothers' home in a remote part of Punjab province. This can kind of relate to Sonny Bean, to what we just heard, the whole cannibalism thing. A senior police officer, Malik Abdul Rahman, told The Guardian that the brothers had been eating corpses for at least a year, but some local media reports alleged that they had been eating human flesh for over a decade. Given how you are going to process the body when you bury it, here in the States, they embalm the bodies, so I wouldn't think that would be okay to eat. Now, if you're just burying the person unprocessed, and I hate to say the word processed, but there is a process to embalming a body. So if you're not doing that and they simply die and you put them in the ground, well, I mean, I can see their flesh being okay to eat. I wouldn't say that it's okay societally, but it is would be in a state which would be okay for ingestion. The investigation that led to the arrest of the two brothers was launched after the family of the 24-year-old cancer victim visited her tomb on Sunday, a day after her funeral, to find that the grave had been dug up and that her body was missing. A police probe led to the brothers' house, where they found the remains of the girl's body in one of the rooms, along with shovels, knives, and other equipment, and the macabre meal. Previous victims included the body of a 4-year-old girl, also taken from a local graveyard. One problem for the police and prosecutors is that cannibalism is so unusual that there is no specific punishment under Pakistani law. The brothers will be charged with digging up and desecrating a grave, which carries a punishment of only 6 months. Local TV footage has shown the men being led away by police and the remains of the body wrapped in a shroud, carried off on a bed to be reburied. The men's sister was also initially arrested, but she is not thought to be involved. And there is a video here that you can go and watch. It's only about 47 seconds long, but it is the Pakistani news that you can go and see. They're speaking in, what do they speak in Pakistan? I'm not sure what language they speak. They're speaking in the language that is common in Pakistan. And you can see them leading the body away with, the stuff that the men had. It's a little bit gruesome. You can see the body wrapped up in a sheet on the bed, and you can see the brothers themselves, you know, being led away by the police. It is a rather gruesome, creepy thing, but it does make me wonder how much goes on across the world, how much cannibalism actually takes place in the world, even in these modern days. Now, the next thing that I wanted to take a look at is courtesy of telegraph.co.uk. Scientists are saying that they found a whole new domain of life. It is life, but not as we know it. A scientist claims to have discovered not just a new species, but a whole new branch of the tree of life. Living things are currently split into three branches or domains: eukaryotes, or complex-celled organisms such as animals, plants, and humans, and two simple-celled microorganism divisions, bacteria and archaea. But now researchers working with the laboratory of the maverick scientist Dr. Craig Venter claims he might have discovered a fourth. Professor Jonathan Eisen, an evolutionary biologist at the University of California, has used complicated gene sequencing techniques to look at a DNA collected by Dr. Venter on a round-the-world yachting trip. He found that some of the genes did not fit into the three domains, and that he could possibly have stumbled onto a whole new domain of life. Trying to classify the new DNA has proved impossible, and so far, Professor Eisen has published his findings in the journal Public Library of Science in the hope that others can help. The question is, what are they? They could represent an unusual virus, which is interesting enough. More interestingly still, they could represent a totally new branch in the tree of life. Even though we did not have the story completely pinned down, we decided to finally write up the paper to get other people to think about this issue. One of the difficulties of trying to study novel genes is that it's hard to culture them in such a quantity to make them easily readable. But Professor Eisen used methods honed by Dr. Venter in a successful attempt to read the human genetic code. They have dubbed the technique as metagenomics, and it involves breaking down the DNA to sizable chunks, decoding them, and then reassembling them in the correct order. The team applied the technique to seawater samples collected between 2003 and 2007 from the world's oceans by Dr. Venter, and Professor Eisen stumbled on variations of two genes called RECA and RPOB, both of which are old and abundant, which had different characteristics to anything in the public genetic databases. Research into classifying the findings go on, but one of the problems is that it is not known where the genes come from. They are simply taken from samples of seawater. So nobody knows what they are or where they came from, but we also know less about the oceans of the world than we do about space. So, of course, we're going to start finding things that we don't know about. You know, we don't know everything that's on this planet. We simply don't. They're always finding new species of animal all over the world. And it wouldn't surprise me if you came up with something new that came from one of the oceans, some of the water on the planet. So I just found it to be really interesting that they are supposedly finding a new domain of life. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take one break here, then we'll come back and we'll take a look at why a witchcraft school is having to change its name. We're also going to be looking at the Stone Age gender bender that's been excavated in Prague. So you guys stay put. We'll be back in just a minute.
$10 was...
Spider went up the water spout. Down came the rain and washed the spider out. Out came the sunshine
Please,
and dried
no.
up all
no.
the rain. And the itty bitty spider went up the spout again.
Notes from the Vault, a short fiction collection by Phil Rossi, featuring all new Crescent vignettes, as well as other stories. Visit www.crescentstation.net for details. Phil Rossi will drive you insane.
Oh, oh no!
Available now on Podiobooks.com.
Jack Wakes Up is the new podcast novel from Seth Harwood. It's crime, it's drugs, it's guns, it's action, it's sex, and yes, it's violence. Jack Wakes Up is about what a movie star one-hit wonder, an ex-drug addict, finds on the streets of San Francisco when he leaves his two-year detox to help a friend make one big score, a single drug trade that's going to set them up for life. Check it out now and every week as Seth Harwood, that's me, drops a new episode of Jack Wakes Up right here at Podiobooks.com.
Available now on Podiobooks.com.
Mine!
As day four in the Seventh Son adventure begins, John Alpha's quest for anarchy and genocide enters its final stage. At every turn, the global terrorist has been triumphant. The world is reeling from a nuclear attack. An unprecedented energy crisis is upon us. Alpha himself has exclusive access to the White House and secret weapons primed to propel his conspiracy into the endgame. Amidst this turmoil, the Seventh Son Project's four surviving beta clones must defy their creators and hunt Alpha on their terms. Their mission? To stop the greatest assassination plot in history. The secrets John and his brothers discover will press them toward a final battle with their progenitor. A battle in which the clones are outgunned, outnumbered, and out of time. Seventh Son, Book 3, Destruction, is the final chapter in J.C. Hutchins' chart-topping audiobook thriller trilogy. Find the entire series, including Book 1, Descent, and Book 2, Deceit, at jchutchins.net and at audiobooks.com.
$10 was...
The next article that I wanted to take a look at is courtesy of articles.boston.com. A Salem school is having to change its name because it's called Witchcraft Heights Elementary School. There's no haunting tale behind the name and no dark plot behind a proposal to rechristen the school and drop the supernatural reference. The school took the moniker when it was built 30 years ago amid a housing development of that name. Now the school committee is considering renaming it in honor of a longtime city councilor. Officials said renaming the Salem's School of Witchcraft Heights as a tribute to Leonard O'Leary has little to do with distancing the city from its past. Their rationale? It's one of two schools in Salem named after something and not someone. That's all there is to this article. There's not much there. This is Salem, and I believe Massachusetts, where they had the Salem witch trials. Why would you change it? I mean, if it's in a place called Witchcraft Heights, why would you change the school? Just, you know, their justification is that they want to name it after someone and not something. But at the same time, I mean, that's your history. That's your heritage. That's what happened in the place in which you are. So having some reference to it isn't a bad thing. I mean, some people are going to think that it is a bad thing, but I just thought it was interesting that they're going to change the name because it has a supernatural reference. The next article is courtesy of theepochtimes.com. A highly contagious AIDS-like disease is spreading in China. In a small hotel across from the Beijing Center for Disease Control and Prevention, a reporter from News Express Daily, dressed in an isolation suit, interviewed a dozen unusual patients from areas of China. Their symptoms are painful and debilitating and AIDS-like, but repeated tests for HIV have come up negative. One of the patients interviewed said that he used to be chubby, but now he has skin and bones and his joints have become all deformed. In 2008, the man's mother received a blood transfusion at a hospital, and afterwards she experienced frequent night sweats, numb limbs, aches all over, creaking joints, rashes on her hands, and weight loss. In May of that year, Lin accidentally became infected through contact with his mother's blood. 14 days later, he fell ill with swollen lymph nodes on his neck, sore knees that made clicking sounds, and pain all over his body. He also started vomiting after every meal, and the left side of his face has swelled up. In half a year, he dropped 82 kilograms or 115 pounds. 3 months later, his wife and child developed the same symptoms, which I guess they would have had to come in contact with his blood. The man said that he went to every hospital in Shanghai, but none could get a definite diagnosis. He's taken the HIV test 8 times, and each time the test has turned out negative, so it's not AIDS or HIV. Several Chinese media have recently reported that the Department of Health in Guangdong Province has confirmed that people in Beijing, Shanghai, and Guangdong have fallen ill after becoming infected with an unknown virus. The patients think they have AIDS, but they don't. They've organized clinical experts, epidemiologists, and psychologists to work together on the cases. The health ministry has also selected 6 provinces with more patients. In most of the 30 cases investigated, people said that their relatives and friends have also become infected. Most of the 30 patients were infected through sexual contact, and some experts diagnosed them as having AIDS phobia. However, the disease seems to be highly contagious and can spread via body contact of any bodily fluid, through kissing, shared utensils, sweat, and even protected sex. Once infected, the immune system appears to be attacked, which results in a decrease of white blood cells and the body's ability to defend against infectious disease and foreign materials. One infected man told the Epoch Times that the disease is highly infectious and hard to prevent. His wife and 2-year-old child both appear to have it. The child has lip and skin blood spots. A retired officer in his 40s told the Epoch Times from a previous June 16th of 2010 report that he had been infected with the disease with similar symptoms in 2009 at a get-together at a friend's house. Consequently, over 100 of the comrades of the man in the army, relatives, and friends were infected by one person. Now, that's extremely contagious, and if it continues and they don't know how to stop it, could this possibly spread all over the world and become some kind of a plague? China has 1 billion people, so I'm guessing that they, you know, are going to have a problem with this because you're not knowing who has it, you don't know how to change it, you don't know how to fix it, you don't know how to cure it, and you don't know how to stop it. What they're going to do, I don't know. I just found it to be rather disconcerting. It makes me a little bit nervous to know that something like this is going on simply just on the other side of the planet. Anyway, let's go ahead and move on to another article, which is courtesy of archaeologydaily.com. Archaeologists have unearthed the unique late Stone Age grave of a transsexual or gay man in a suburb of the Czech Republic. Czech archaeologists have discovered what they are calling a third gender grave, a unique late Stone Age grave of a transsexual or gay man dating from between 2500 to 2800 BC and the era of the so-called corded ware culture in the Czech Republic. Speculation about the sexual orientation of the buried man was sparked by the unorthodox positions in which his skeleton was found, in a society which was a real stickler for grave etiquette. From history and ethnology, we know that when a culture had strict burial rules, they never made mistakes with these sorts of things, said the head of the archaeological research team, Camilla Rimova. The civilization from which the late Stone Age man hailed covered much of northern Europe, from the River Rhine in Germany to the Volga in Russia, and was also known as a single grave and battle axe culture due to the separate burials and the men's habit of being buried with, by then largely symbolic, stone axes. Whereas male skeletons from that culture are usually found buried on their right side with their heads facing east, this grave in Taranska Street in Prague is interred on its left side with the head facing the west, the traditional position of female burials. An oval egg-shaped container usually associated with female burials was also found at the feet of the skeleton. None of the telltale objects that usually accompany male burials, such as weapons, stone battle axes, and flint knives, were found in the grave. We believe this is one of the earliest cases of what could be described as a transsexual or third gender grave in the Czech Republic, said archaeologist Kajina Simradova. She said that the archaeologists had uncovered similar cases where men were buried as women and women as men dating from the much earlier Mesolithic period, when men hunted mammoths. Simradova added that a woman buried as a man, because she was probably a warrior, had been found in the Czech Republic dating from the 3rd century BC. Siberian shamans, or latter-day witch doctors, were also buried in this way, but with richer funeral accessories to appropriate their elevated position in society. The Prague archaeological site, which also features two more conventional male and female burials from the same period, will be open to the public on Thursday, which was this past Thursday, with children given the opportunity to see how excavation work is carried out. I know that a lot of you might not find any interest in archaeological stuff. Personally, I find a huge interest in it, especially whenever it's something that's different than what society has normally been put out there as to the way things were back in those days. We're not going to go into the whole gay-straight thing because I don't want to go there. If you're gay, you're gay. If you're straight, you're straight. I don't really care. As long as you are nice to me, I really don't care what or who you are. Just be nice to me. That's all that matters to me. But when it comes to this kind of thing dating back that far, 2500 to 2800 BC, I'd like to know more about the stance that the society back then had on homosexuality. Did they have look at it? Or were they kind of the way America or the United States is these days, where, you know, some people are okay with it and some people aren't? Were they completely against it? They buried this person in the way that was fitting for them. So, you know, I would think that they gave them at least some respect. So it just makes me wonder. Let's go ahead and move on to the next article, which is courtesy of HurrietDailyNews.com. A traveling UFO museum has opened in Istanbul. A touring UFO museum designed by the Sirius UFO Space Sciences Research Center opened Tuesday at Forum Istanbul Shopping Mall. The group said it hopes that the documents and evidence contained in the exhibit would convince skeptics of the veracity of claims that aliens walk among us. Speaking about the project, Sirius UFO Space Science Research Center director Haktan Oktogan said it was one of the first of its kind in the world. The goal of the project is to introduce a global culture to Turkish people and share information proving that we are not alone in the world by displaying written and visual materials. Digital photographs, secret documents, certificates of analysis, video visuals, articles, and rejuvenations in the specifically designed touring UFO museum. Oktogan said the UFO museum truck was specifically designed The museum and exhibition include all incidents related to UFOs since very early periods of our time, official NASA documents, secret documents, kidnappings, UFO photos, and video from Turkey and around the world, as well as specifically made mock-ups and models. The project was launched without any financial support. The Sirius Center used their own resources. The mobile museum will be set up in front of shopping malls and open for visits. Admission is free, but they do want some donations if you can give them, I'm sure. The project, which was launched in Istanbul, will travel for 1 year. It's going to visit many cities, universities, and high schools. The touring UFO museum will be opened in the parking lot of Forum Istanbul Shopping Mall until April 10th, which pretty much is going to be by the time you guys hear this. It's not really going to travel anywhere outside of Istanbul or outside of Turkey, but they're expecting at least 1 million people to have visited by the end of the project. So it's just interesting to me. There's a picture there that you can go and take a look at it and see what they're talking about. I just want something like this to go worldwide. Come around here. I would love to see this. If there's anybody that's living in Turkey or close by to Turkey that is listening to this show, go and take a look at this, take some pictures, and let me know what you think. I would love to see this in person. So if you do, let me know. I want to hear what your experience with it was. Let's go ahead and take a look at another article, which is courtesy of news.discovery. Astronomers are being puzzled by a mysterious cosmic blast. They're thinking that it's a hungry black hole. Astronomers are tracking unusual, extremely bright blast of radiation coming from the center of a galaxy 3.8 billion light years from Earth. Typically, a burst as powerful as the one seen in the Draco constellation marks the death throes of a massive star. But that's usually a one-time event. So far, the source has brightened 4 times since Tuesday. The first sign of the event was on March 28th when the Swift gamma ray detector picked up a burst. Automated messages went out to astronomers' cell phones and they quickly mobilized to get a better fix on the blast location. Follow-up observations showed the source was a distant galaxy, but most surprising is that the outburst didn't stop. Most gamma-ray bursts go off once and then they fade away into nothingness, said astronomer Andrew Levon with the University of Warwick in the United Kingdom. Scientists suspect they are seeing a star being shredded by a black hole, a common enough phenomenon that looks different because of Earth's viewing angle. As a black hole consumes nearby matter, it generates extremely powerful jets comprised of X-rays and gamma rays. Grounded space-based telescopes, including Chandra X-ray Observatory and the Hubble Space Telescope, have been tracking the burst, which was traced to the center of a dwarf galaxy. Astronomers are curious if the apparent star feeding will trigger the galaxy's black hole to switch over into a more active phase. The galaxy, which is not named, is one of billions of star-forming dwarf galaxies. This discovery is also likely to reshape understanding of how black holes rip up stars. Current computer models show such events lasting up to about a week at most, according to astronomer Neil Garrels with NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center in Maryland. If this goes on for another week or so, he said, we're going to be really baffled. This is just interesting to me because I love astronomy too. I love this stuff. To know that black holes actually exist and that they can rip things up and compress them down into this infinite point is just amazing to me. Anyway, I want you guys to go take a look at the rest of this article and let me know what you think. We're going to go on to one last article for you free guys. It's courtesy of archaeologydaily.com again. More human remains have been found at a site in Des Moines, Iowa, but these could be 7,000 years old. Sewer construction workers made an unusual discovery in Des Moines' southeast side in January. Remains of a human body archaeologists believe could be as old as 7,000 years. The remains are thought to be from the Middle Archaic period and were found near a site where scientists believe early Lowans harvested, cooked, and consumed clams thousands of years ago. Ancient ash and charcoal remains, apparent signs of Stone Age clam bake, also were uncovered. Studies are ongoing, but it's one of the earliest and best-known samples of an archaic site discovered in Iowa. Its exact location is not being revealed because of fears of looters. There's likely to be national interest, said Ben Thomas, director of programs for the Archaeological Institute of America. While archaeologists are thrilled at the prospects of learning more about Iowa's ancient past, some people are concerned about the consequences of the discovery. The fine will delay the original $37.8 million sewer project for at least 6 months and cost the Des Moines area's Wastewater Reclamation Authority an estimated $1.5 million. Iowa must abide by the 1966 National Historic Preservation Act that requires projects using federal money to evaluate the impact a project may have on an archaeological or historical site. Artifacts that are found will likely be placed in a repository with the state archaeologist and be placed on display for the public after the work is completed. Archaic period materials have been found across the state, including such artifacts as projectile points, more commonly known as arrowheads. The closest comparison is a site in Cherokee County unearthed in the 1970s. Ancient human remains, those 150 years or older, are protected under Iowa law. The state archaeologist typically works to preserve burial sites. But when that's not possible, the body is examined and buried in a state cemetery that is closed to the public. It's just interesting to me because I love archaeology, and to know that they're finding human remains that are 7,000 years old in Des Moines, Iowa, is just absolutely fascinating. So, you guys and gals, I really hate to say that it's coming up on the end of the show. Let's go ahead and bury the formalities, get them in the dirt and out of the way. If you want to, give me an email. I would love to hear what you have to say. It's the13skulls@gmail.com. or info@the13skulls.com, or you can call me and give me your feedback at 206-338-2205 or 817-986-0019. I will post up a link to ufoclearinghouse.webs.com. You can go and take a look at all the great UFO sightings that they have listed there. If you like the music in the show, some of it is courtesy of the IOTA Promonet at www.iotaalliance.com. Or some of the music might be provided by Mevio's Music Alley at music.mevio.com. The sound effects that have been, are being, and will be used in the show are courtesy of the Free Sound Project at www.freesound.org. If you have a podcast, radio show, you want to share a promo, let me know, email me, and I'll throw it into the show. If you want a button or a magnet, email me with your name and address, and I'll ship one out to you ASAP. Just let me know which one you want. It's either got to be one or the other. I'll post links up to everything you've heard about in the show notes. Now, for all of you premium people, man, we have just got a whole bunch of stuff. We're going to be taking a look at the werewolf organization and how you might be able to escape Earth by 2012. So you guys stay put. We'll be back in just a minute. For all of you free people, I really hope you've been doing good. Have a great day, night, week, weekend, whatever it is that you're listening to this, and I'll talk to you guys again on another day.
In the beginning, yeah, from the start, with a conscious effort, wah-wah-wah, well, I'm not caught up in those corrupted ways that pollute a sorry days, and I'm not afraid of being afraid. Fear takes heroes as well as grace. You're afraid of being afraid. You're afraid of being afraid. Your body and by then you're opening up your eyes for the first time. Know a lot of you will not understand, cause you never shook your old death by the hand. We're all just made of flesh and bone, born of our lives and we die alone.
Heroes as well as grace. Not afraid of being afraid. Not afraid of being afraid. nothing to fear. I got nothing to fear.